Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot, and I've been feeling a little bit under the weather, so it's a good thing we have a doctor here with us today. We have our Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Lena Lee, back on the program as we are resuming our regular Wednesdays with the Health Unit. Dr. Lee, welcome back.
Hello again. It's great to be back.
Now, I asked you off air how you were enjoying it so far, because you've been only at this for about 6-7 weeks or so. How are you liking it? How are you settling in?
Yeah, almost 2 months. I'm loving it. It's great. I'm really loving the work at the Health Unit. The staff are great. The work is really coming, and I'm so proud of that work. And for me personally, just settling in and getting to know the region, knowing that there's a lot more to get to know, a lot of people to meet, that's really exciting, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, you can't bite off too much of this region at once. You have to take smaller bites as you explore it. And I'm, you know, kind of jealous that you get to do that, because, you know, it's such a great area to be a part of. And we want to thank you again for joining us here. It's been a while since we have spoken, and a lot has happened as far as the local pandemic scene goes. And we wanted to really sort of start out just by talking about the local numbers, what we've seen. We've been reporting them here over the while, and we've seen a surge. We've seen the number of cases go up. And then the last report that we got was kind of a mixed bag of good and bad news when you compare it to the other reports that we've seen.
Yeah, so our case counts in the region do continue to rise. It is in keeping with a rise in the case counts across not just the LGL region, but across Eastern Ontario as a whole. Eastern Ontario does seem to have greater number of cases and to be rising in cases a little bit earlier than some other regions of the province. And so we are in keeping with that. Having said that, it is in the trend of what we've been expecting as a fall and winter respiratory season wave. And so as a reminder, I think we've talked about in the past on this show, actually, that we're thinking about COVID-19, flu, and other respiratory viruses in this particular season. And that is indeed coming to pass. So we've been having, for example, RSV and rhinovirus. Those are common cold-causing viruses in our region, and we're seeing that in the testing that we do. We're not seeing flu yet. We're waiting to see whether we're going to expect that. Or I should say, we are expecting that. We're waiting to see if we're going to see it. Mm-hmm. But it may be that, like past years, we won't see a peak until sort of in and around Christmas, post-Christmas, into that winter season. We are seeing rises in COVID-19 cases. And so in the past week, we had 191 cases. As you know, we've been doing weekly updates now. And that is a rise from the number of cases that we would have seen even a month or 2 months ago. I am expecting this to be a steady, continued rise, just because we're going indoors. School is very much in swing, and we're going into the holiday, or we're already into the holiday season with Thanksgiving having come. And so there's some important things that I would encourage everyone to keep in mind. One, of course, is a continued focus on the importance and effectiveness of vaccination being the single most effective way that people can prevent transmission of COVID-19 as well as severe outcomes due to COVID-19. The other that I would emphasize is wearing a mask in public spaces, and really recommending it not just for personal protection, but also protecting other people. As we know, people wearing a mask will, if they're ill, not just for COVID-19, but many other respiratory viruses, if they're ill, it does sort of contain the viruses that they're shedding to a smaller area. And that does help prevent transmission. And so I would recommend, you know, wearing a mask for yourself for personal protection, but also wearing a mask for just being a community member, being part of our communities and our general public, so that you can prevent transmitting to others if you happen to be ill but don't even realize it yet.
And we saw the Ottawa Health Unit actually put that out there as a recommendation that everyone, wear a mask, and they made it sort of official that it was a recommendation. And here it's more of a suggestion at this point, correct?
Yeah, well, what we call a recommendation or a suggestion, or, you know, like I think the words are maybe less important. I think the importance is maybe for me is the focus on knowing what would be best to protect ourselves and to protect others around us. And masking is certainly one of those things that we can do. I think the message being similar to what we've talked about in the past as well, which is not everyone can wear a mask. And so being respectful to other people when they're choosing to wear a mask or if they're choosing not to. I myself actually do wear a mask whenever I go out to public spaces and have been for a little bit, mainly as a measure of respect for other people, because I know that some people who are out in public who may have vulnerable health would benefit from other people around them wearing masks, right? And so that's something that I found many people are respectful of, and I would encourage people to continue to do that for sure.
And as always, you know, a lot of these methods that you're talking about, whether it be masking or, you know, staying at home when possible if you're ill, these are sort of they're going to be a byproduct for the other viruses like you were talking about.
Absolutely.
As far as a product of protection, and we've learned a lot over the course of the pandemic, and a lot of what we learned can be applied to other places like you were mentioning. When it comes to vaccinations, obviously that's still your first line of defense, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think one of the important things to remember about vaccination is that really the evidence is showing that the time since your last dose of vaccine is probably the most important element of vaccination. And so regardless of which specific vaccine product you get, I know some people will have gotten a monovalent vaccine or the original vaccine and are not yet eligible for a bivalent vaccine just because it's not been long enough since their previous dose. Or, you know, different vaccine products, whether it's Moderna versus Pfizer versus something else. So what's really important is how long it's been since the last dose of vaccine. I've recently seen some reports indicating, you know, some people are well over 6 months since their last dose, some people 9 months, some people over a year. What we're seeing in the evidence is that the protection that people get from vaccination, or for that matter, from previous infection, does wane over time. By about 6 months, 7 months, that level of protection is not what it once was. And so there remains some protection, for example, in preventing severe illness, but that does drop over time as well. And so being vaccinated with booster doses and boosting that immune response to be high again, that's really the focus of what we're talking about in these current vaccines campaigns. So I know that people have received a number of doses of vaccine. So we're moving away, quite rightly, from counting the number of doses of vaccine, because what we found is that the total number of doses is not as important as how long it's been since people's last dose. And so this is a call for people who are past, certainly if you're past 9 or 10 months since your last dose of vaccine, and also for people who are eligible, right? So even People who are 5 or 6 months past their last dose of vaccine, I would highly recommend that they get vaccinated for COVID-19 because we do have rising case counts in our region, and I am expecting them to continue to rise. So that risk is rising, and vaccination, recent vaccination, is one of the most important ways that people can protect against transmission for COVID-19, as well as severe outcomes.
Now we're sort of jumping all over the place here as we talk about this, which is great because it's all flowing nicely for sure. But when it comes to vaccination rates here, we're still, better than 9 out of 10 people in the area who are ages 5 and up are double dosed, which is pretty impressive. It goes down a little bit, for the for those who have had their third and fourth or their, first and second boosters or whatever, with 68.9% and 33% for the fourth dose. That number 33%, it went up a little bit yesterday because my wife and I got our fourth doses. So that will go up just a hair. But nonetheless, it's still pretty encouraging numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I'm seeing from these numbers is that people still do consider vaccination. They're thinking about it, and people are still taking COVID-19 seriously. I think people have sort of a healthy balance. I see that a lot with the people I interact with in the region, as well as my friends and family, is that really healthy perspective on COVID-19 is something that we need to take seriously and take precautions, but at the same time also balancing other elements of our physical and mental health. And so thinking about what it means to have contact with friends and family while we're having these high numbers of cases, what people's comfort level is for risk of transmission, but also with vaccination, especially recent vaccination, by which I mean back a dose of vaccine within the past 5 to 6 months. I think one of the things that people can think about is if you've been recently vaccinated, you've protected yourself in one of the best ways possible. And then the other ways that you can protect yourself, meeting in well-ventilated spaces, having virtual meetings where possible, those are other ways that people can protect themselves. But I think our vaccination stats do demonstrate continued sort of interest and the serious nature of or how seriously people are taking this. And I would encourage people, of course, to continue to consider that.
Now, people often wonder what they can expect to get as far as a vaccine goes when they go to one of the health unit's clinics. So maybe you can explain that for us.
Yeah, so currently we are using bivalent vaccines for all booster doses. So if you've had your primary series, which for most people is two doses, then any subsequent dose would be a bivalent dose of vaccine. So that we're calling the fall booster, because we're moving away from the number of doses and into really just seasons of doses. So that vaccine is available for anyone who's 12 and over. There are some nuances on what vaccines people are eligible for based on their age and certain comorbidities. And so rather than getting into the nitty-gritty here, which may not be relevant for most people, what I would say is our clinics are really excellent and our staff are really excellent on providing the correct dose. And even going to, for example, the bivalent vaccine is widely available in pharmacies in our region as well. And so all of that, people do check in on which is the right vaccine for people to get, the right dose for people to get. And so the focus remains that fall bivalent vaccine. I do want to say as well, speaking of availability, that walk-ins are the primary way that people are able to get the vaccine now. We do have good availability for walk-ins for us at the health unit. And as well, we have, as I mentioned before, lots of pharmacies that also provide the fall bivalent vaccine. And so there isn't, so, early on when that bivalent vaccine first became available, I think there were some wait lists and some delays for people because we had a limited supply. That has eased now, and so supply is no longer an issue and scheduling is no longer an issue.
What about when it comes to people who do have COVID now? I mean, sadly, we heard another two lives were lost over the past week, and added there. And this goes back to what you were talking about as far as watching out for other people as well, because we do know that for the most part, the people who are passing away are very susceptible to COVID-19 and the ill effects. When it comes to treatment that is out there for people, we still hear a lot about Paxlovid, but we don't know much about it as far as, you know, who can get it and when they can get it.
Yeah, so Paxlovid is an antiviral that is used in treatment of COVID-19. It's probably the most widely available treatment for COVID-19. There are some others, but they are much more specific. For people who are at home listening, Paxlovid is available for people who are at higher risk of getting severe illness due to COVID-19, especially people who are at higher risk of hospitalization. Now, what I want to emphasize is that people don't need to be severely ill in order to be getting Paxlovid. It's really people who are at that higher risk. The reason I say that and emphasize that is that it's actually necessary to start treatment with Paxlovid within 5 days of when people start getting symptoms if they have COVID-19. And so if you are symptomatic, even if your symptoms are relatively mild, if you're in those high-risk categories, you are eligible for Paxlovid. And in fact, Paxlovid is considered quite effective in reducing your risk of severe illness. And so a little bit complicating is that health units, we ourselves are not involved in actually assessing people's eligibility or actually dispensing the medication. That would be done through people's primary care, so their family docs, or else through the assessment centers. But I did want to put this message out there because sometimes we do see, because we get those reports of who's gotten COVID-19, we do see that people have COVID-19, and then we think, oh, they probably would have been eligible for Paxlovid. But they didn't end up getting it because they didn't know, or because they didn't report and get tested within 5 days of symptom onset. So what people need to do, one is you can look on our website where we've identified people who would be eligible for Paxlovid and what it means to be at higher risk for severe COVID-19. So take a look at that. If you're eligible, or even if you just have questions, you can see if you're t eligible to get a PCR test. So anyone who's eligible to get Paxlovid would also be eligible to get PCR testing for COVID-19, which is that test that needs to go to the lab. So it's not that home rapid test. So if you get that PCR test within 5 days of when your symptoms start, then you would also need to, if you test positive for COVID-19, then if you're still within that 5 days of when your symptoms started, you could actually get prescribed Paxlovid. So that's something, again, you can get prescribed through your family doc or your primary care or through the assessment center.
And to get all the information on this and a lot more, healthunit.org. We've got a link up at lanarkleadstoday.ca as well. Right on the front page, you can get COVID information, you can get the vaccine information. I booked an appointment today for another person to get a get their shot, and it was very easy. It really is. It's all right there at your fingertips. I had a quick question for you before I let you go, though, doctor. We've seen in the stores now you can pick up the test kits. They've changed. They're a different test kit that is there, you know, and some of us have some of the older test kits. Should we be getting rid of the older ones and then having the new ones, or are the older ones still good?
Oh, the old ones are still good. You just have to check to see whether they've expired or not. The test kits do re expire. They'll be labeled. It's the same test kits, just, through different companies. And so the technology is the same, and it's just the brand that might be different. And you can continue to use them. They should all have instructions on whether there's specific, like small nuances, that are different in how you use the kits from person to person. But you can continue to use the same test kits, as long as they're not expired.
All right. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Was there anything that you wanted to leave our listeners with today, Dr. Lee?
I think we covered everything that I really, really wanted to emphasize. Oh, the one thing that I'll also mention is, like we talked about earlier about other respiratory viruses, flu, and the importance of getting a flu shot as well, because we know that other things are circulating. We're suspecting that flu will circulate in the months to come. Getting that flu shot is a critical element of protecting against the flu as well, and avoiding as much as we can getting ill with respiratory disease is certainly something that I think everyone is interested in doing this particular fall and winter season.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially after two fall and winter seasons where we were pretty much apart and didn't, you know, we didn't see much of a flu season. Now that everybody's sort of, you know, mixing again, things are starting to pick up, so to speak. So you're exactly right. You are. Again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, Dr. Lee. It's always very nice to have you on. It's very reassuring. I think overall, your assessment is that we're still doing well and we just need to keep up the good work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And get
Fantastic.
vaccinated.
Yeah, and get vaccinated, of course. Excellent. Well, thanks so much. We will talk to you in the very near future.
Right, great. And it's great to be back.
All right. Yes, it is great to be back. Dr. Lena Lee, who is the Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, back with us again after a little bit of a break here, but we are going to get you through the holiday season here with the Health Unit, featuring Dr. Lee and a different person from the Health Unit. Every week, every Wednesday, you do not want to miss it. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening and have a wonderful afternoon.